What's up, everybody? I am Natalie Diaz, founder of Twiniversity, author of What to Do When You're Having Two and the Newborn Twin Sleep Guide, and welcome to the Twiniversity podcast, the only podcast where parenting twins isn't just a challenge, it's an adventure. Whether you're juggling bottles, nap schedules, or just trying to keep your sanity intact, we've genuinely got you covered. Join us each episode as we share tips, stories, and laughs with fellow twin parents from around the globe and experts too, who just get it. From the chaos to the cuddles, we're here to support, laugh, and learn together. So grab your favorite cup of coffee or whatever you're drinking these days, buckle up, and get ready for some real talk about real life with twinnies. Because when you're raising a duo, everything is twice as fun. To bank or not to bank? That is the question. Sure, this may not have been a problem in Shakespearean times, but it certainly is a question that comes up all the time now. So if you're currently pregnant with twins, you gotta make sure that you do your research on banking your twinnies' cord blood. A great place to start is at cordblood.com. That's the website of our friends over at Cord Blood Registry. Your newborn's umbilical cord blood contains powerful stem cells that have been used to regenerate healthy blood and immune systems in transplant medicine. These stem cells are also being investigated for their potential use in regenerative medicine. Preserving your child's newborn stem cells at birth is an opportunity to provide access to current and potential future stem cell treatment options for your family. So learn more today at cordblood.com or call 1-888-CORD-BLOOD. Use code DUO2 for special twins pricing through Twiniversity.
Word up, Mama Bear.
Yo, what's up?
Yo. I said something the other day. I was at Lowe's and I said like buy home slice or something. And I was with Monica. Monica's like, nobody knows what that means. You're too old. Don't say, yes, but Lauren, it's us. Like if we said that to like a 20-year-old.
They'd be like,
is she going to know what home slice is? Which basically it's like homeboy, homegirl. Like you're my person. I can't believe that I even am explaining this, but just in case those of you who are listening out there, if you don't know what home slice is, but I don't want to be judged for what I call people because everybody's my friend.
Yes, it's nicknames. And if we don't give you a nickname and we don't make fun of you, we don't love you.
Exactly. That's why don't people understand that? Is that a New York thing?
Like I think it is. Like if we don't rag on you and give you a hard time, you don't worry.
Yes.
You should worry.
Correct. Where I think that people in perhaps other parts of the country or world probably do things the other way around.
Yes. When I work with clients and if I don't give them little nicknames and like poke fun at them.
Yes.
There's a problem. I don't like them.
Yeah. Ms. Lauren, are you ready for today's topic?
Sure. What is it?
It's something that you're familiar with because I know that you literally just told me 2 seconds ago that you know what this is. So we're talking to an identical twin. So this person does not have twins. So Julie and her sister are identical twins and they were adopted when they were younger and they were raised together with their adoptive family.
Aww.
It's just like, that's really, really sweet. But I've seen that a bit, which is nice. Like I'm knocking on wood because I couldn't even imagine separating twins and adopting them to separate families. But did you ever see that movie? Is it Three Perfect Strangers?
Yes, where the triplets were adopted out separately.
Girl, I know that was our city, unfortunately.
I know, but they
we're
did
horrible.
That like a science experiment.
Which is why it's so horrible.
Yes, and they would separate twins constantly.
Yes, I can't even imagine that.
It's horrible. Oh, my goodness.
I bet you Joan Friedman has written about this topic. Which, speaking of which, she just came out with a new book, by the way. So guys, if you don't know who Joan Friedman is a twin-specific psychologist. I literally have her book right here. I'm trying to find it. She's a twin-specific psychologist, and she works with twin issues. She is a twin. She has twins. Like, she's in it. And she came up with this new book, and it's all the essays of people who have written in to her website or that she's worked with. Like it's a compilation of twin essays, let's say.
Aw.
Found it. Told you. It's called Beyond the Bond. So Beyond the Bond, and it is insights into navigating the challenges of being raised a twin. So Joan loves that. But you know what I loved about this book? I loved it that like the stories were short. I know that
That's
sounds
good. It's like
horrible.
short stories. Like you can just read a couple pages and be done with
Literally,
the
like
story.
every like one a whole story is on one page.
Yeah.
And then you go to the next story. So
She should
like
talk
the
to my twins. My
oh,
twins don't like each other,
I
so.
think about your twins all the time when I talk to her, and I'm just like, oh, had we just gotten them the help that they needed and just made them be friends? I can't. Your twinnies are fascinating. I was talking to Genevieve yesterday, and I was saying how when I was hanging out with you and your family, that your kids stayed with me, but only one twin. The other one doesn't like us. The other one
She doesn't
doesn't
like
like me.
anybody. She doesn't like anybody.
No, she's just, but that's her, and we love her for who she is.
Yes.
So, yeah,
We have to
so.
accept her for who she is.
We do. But they're like, I don't know. Do you think that it's more pressure if you're an identical twin and you have a more challenging bond? Or do you think that it's
I
like,
think
is
there's
it
a
easier
different
to
bond.
accept?
I think there's a different bond when you're an identical twin. I think they have a bond. Whereas when they're fraternal, the bond is just like a sibling. Like my brother and I don't get
Yeah.
along. We don't talk.
Well, we can't talk about him out loud.
No.
That's it. Everybody's got a black sheep of the family.
At
That's
least
what
it's not
happens.
me.
Amen. Or maybe it is. No one knows. The black sheep usually sometimes doesn't even know.
They don't know. Yeah, my brother definitely doesn't know.
Yeah, he's oblivious. Leave him be. Everybody's fine. Everybody does their own thing. But like I keep like when I talk to Julian when we tape this podcast, I was really fascinated by just her story of her and her sister. And she actually wrote, she's an author. So like she's done a lot. She's got a BA in psychology. This
Wow.
woman, like she's legit. Like this was a really, really fascinating conversation. So I always ask, like, you know that there's nothing that's off the table whenever I'm
Yeah.
interviewing people.
Oh,
So I'm
yeah.
like, do they treat you differently? Because like, do you have any friends in your circle besides me, of course? Well, not me because I wasn't adopted, but do you have any adopted friends in your circle? Do you have anybody that you're friends with that was raised in an adopted house?
Yes, I do. And then my next client adopted twins, but then had twins.
That's what I
So
love.
I
Could you
start with her on
imagine?
Sunday, but I do have a friend. I have a doula friend who was adopted from Korea.
A doula friend. Yes, I have quite a few friends that were actually adopted.
Yeah.
So I don't know like how that is. I feel like sometimes our population is so big that statistically we're going
Yeah,
to
there's
run
got to
into
be.
adoptive people more than most.
And I do have a mom friend who was adopted, now that I think about
That's
it.
what I'm saying. It's
A
like we
neighborhood
know
mom
people.
friend, yes.
But like think about what it would be like to be adopted. But think how different that experience could be if you were there with your identical twin.
Yeah, like at least there's somebody there.
Yeah. Like
Yeah,
no matter
that's.
how different that house may be, you always have
Yes.
your lighthouse right next to you.
Yes.
She's really fascinating. The whole thing is really it's a fascinating story, and I'm really excited that she even gave us some time. So are you ready to hear Julie and hear her story?
Yes.
All right, Mama Bear, here we go. Here's Julie, guys. Julie, thank you so much for joining us today.
That's my thrill to be here.
I cannot wait to kind of dig into both your writing life and then just as the life of an identical twin. And we've had a few conversations with people before that are twins on this podcast. And truthfully, I mean, I'm not going to say they're like our top three, but they're definitely our top 10 because I think parents of twins really like to get into the mind of their kids. And it's really difficult because no one really wants to kind of have deep conversations with your mom, nor could you at 3 years old, let's say. You have
Right.
an interesting twin story, and I was absolutely fascinated. And I've read some of your essays, and I cannot believe how much you have accomplished, even literary in your universe, on top of everything else. So, like author to author, I tip my hat to you, but I'm dying to dig in because a lot of the content, of course, is around your life. And one of the big components is being an identical twin. But your identical twin story was so unique because you didn't know you guys were identical initially, right? You found that out a little bit down the road. But there's a lot of us who have twinnies like that as well, who still may not want to take that DNA test to find out what's happening. But not only were you dealing with all that and finding your independence and individuality, but with being adopted, that's like another layer of trying to figure out who you are.
So I am faceted and riveted, and I want all the dirty details. And I want you to try to help bring insight to our listeners about what that was like for you and what that's like to try to find out who you are when you're in the middle of a storm, because that's what it kind of feels like to me. It's like you're trying to find out who you are as Julie, right? And then who you are as a daughter, and then who you are as a woman, and then who you are as a sister. It's a lot of self-discovery on top of just trying to pay your electric bill.
Well, first of all, let me just start out by saying being a twin is an amazing experience and blessing. And then add the adoption piece to it, to grow up with a full sibling, like more than a full sibling, is a gift beyond. You know, my experience as a twin is so unique because of the adoption piece. And I mean, think about it. From before we even were born, we have this bond.
Yeah.
But then to go through, you know, the whole identity and individuality piece as children, as teenager, as young women, and then to still have that as an adult. So she and I navigated our adoption search together. I was 48 years old, had a breast biopsy, and my husband said, get at this. And I'm from the closed adoption area, meaning knew nothing about anything or anybody. Those were the rules. Those were the laws. That's what everybody understood it to be. And then the state laws in Illinois changed at the time I was searching, and I had access to my original birth record. I said to my sister, are you in? I got to do this. She said, absolutely. So to go down that journey of a lot of rejection, a lot of ups and downs, we had some conflict with our adoptive mom about this. She wasn't so happy about sharing the mother role with somebody else because the rules changed on her too. Here she thought, you know, these are my babies, and now this other mother's going to possibly come into the picture. Anyway, we navigated all that together. I was married. My husband has since passed away since all this happened. But to have her still in my life through all of these ups and downs, being grandmothers at the same time. Each of us has one son each who are best friends.
Oh,
That is so cool. Anyway, it's just been a tremendous blessing. And I often think, I've been reading a book about twins, what we learn about them and how that influences how psychologists look at other people, how it extrapolates out. And I can't even imagine not being a twin. And one of the things that was interesting, as my mom's gotten older, she's more honest. I don't know if that's like something that happens, but she's more honest. And she said, you know, I could never get inside you guys. Mm. And I wanted to bring that up today with your listeners that are adoptive parents, because why would you want to? You know, why would you want to get inside that? You have given your children, whether they're identical or fraternal, this tremendous gift to go through life with this very, very special bond. And as much energy as you put into getting them beyond babies and toddlers or whatever, you've provided this amazing experience for your two children. Don't try to get inside that.
I want to defend your mother for a second.
Go ahead.
Sitting on the mom's side, I think one of the reasons behind us wanting to get in is because we just want to know that you feel safe. And I think it has to do with, it doesn't have to do with figuring out the nuts and bolts and how things work, but it's the nuts and bolts to make sure that you feel whole and that you didn't feel like you were half of something and that you felt like you were your own. I have chills even thinking about it because it's very true. I think as parents of twins, we're always trying to get in or figure it out, but we're not trying to figure it out to like crack the code on you. We're trying to crack the code on our child to make sure that they feel okay and that they're going to be okay without you. Because it's not only time, right? It's whether you are in your 80s or whether you are in your 30s. if your kids are old enough to be on their own, you really want to make sure that they really are okay. And I think that cracking the code, it's yes, it's definitely the sideshow aspect of the identical twins. I think there's always going to be some fascination about that. But I think as far as parents go, we're always just trying to make sure that our kids feel safe and that you feel seen and that you felt like you were enough. So I just want to defend your mom for one second.
Yeah.
I'm very off base, by the way.
No, I understand what you're saying. And I think she did do that, made sure that we were safe. She was very conscious of putting us into different classes, encouraging us to play different sports, different friend groups. She was very good about that. And one of the things that we didn't like that she couldn't really control so much was the outsiders stand next to each other. Oh, you're a half inch taller and you look like you're a little heavier. And, you know, Julie's the serious twin and Jenny's the social one. And those labels.
Oh, yes.
She was really, really good about protecting us from that labeling. When I said she wanted to get inside us, you know, she would see us do the little shared eye roll thing or the kind of the quick glance. And she wanted to know what we were telecommunicating with each other. And we weren't going to share that. And we still don't. Like even our husbands, we still do ridiculous stuff like showing up with the same pair of pants and shoes and not even talking about it. Even our husbands would sit back and kind of go, we're outside of this.
Yeah, your mystery.
This little thing that we have with this telecommunicating and understanding without speaking. And that goes back to our original conversation talking about this adoption search stuff. Wow. To know that she understood when we were in that embrace with our birth mother, just to look at her, to know that she felt the same thing, this awe, this wonder that was percolating for 50 years, we were in it together, was just, you know, all I can say is a gift and a blessing, which feels like an overuse of both of those words. So mom, I think, sits back now and kind of just loves the fact that we're both still in our lives and taking care of her. And we are the yin yang. If one of us can't do it, the other one does. And that passenger driver thing, you know, there wasn't ever really somebody that was in charge all the time. We would pass the responsibility over to the other one. And I think that that's a nice thing. It's a little bit like a marriage, right? Yeah. You know,
it's a relationship. It's one of the strongest relationships you could ever have. I mean, it really, it's right up there. So of course, you know, it's funny that you said that your mom, as she gets older, she's getting more honest. I have used the term, you know how there's a bucket list?
Yeah.
Well, I have coined the term the effort list. So you could fill that in because I feel like that's what my mom is going through. And no longer she just has no F's to give and she doesn't care. So she's burning all the bridges as she walks over them. And good for her. I look forward to that someday. I'll drink to that. Now, Julie, what if Jenny said no when you first thought about starting this exploration? And what, you know, you're going through this whole biopsy situation and it's such a scary thing to go through. And for you trying to find that piece of you that you still want to learn more about, what if she said no?
Yeah, I've thought about that. Well, I was definitely going to have to go forward anyway to figure out if breast cancer ran in our family. And we did find out that it did. So it was good for all of us. Between us, we have four daughters, and certainly breast cancer can happen to guys too, as we know now. She hesitated. This wasn't something that we were actively ever thinking we were going to do. It sort of landed in our lap. Yeah, we got to try this. And she hesitated because she knew that it wasn't going to go over well with our folks.
Yeah.
And that loyalty issue with them, I think, was part of why we hadn't, you know, gotten at it before then. So, and that's true of a lot of adoptees that, you know, they wait until their parents, their adoptive parents are deceased or just because if you've had a good life and you feel very loyal and you kind of, you know, you don't know what you don't know. What are you walking into?
True.
But we did walk right into it, and it's sticky business. You know, there's a lot of shame and loss around the whole adoption equation for everybody. So we walked right into that, but we walked into it holding hands, if you will, because we talked about everything along the way and how to address all of the ups and downs. Mm-hmm. We never did meet our birth father. He absolutely flat out rejected us and didn't want to meet us. But so interesting, and I won't spoil it if anybody wants to read the memoir called Twice a Daughter, which is about that search. We find a brother and a sister, and we have a crazy synchronicity connection to him. And it turns out that anyway, our paths have been crossing, overlapping one another, and then we figured it out. But he was the change maker, that half brother was the change maker in a lot of relationships. And I think when you ask enough questions of people, you do figure out, like the guy sitting next to you on the plane. If you ask enough questions, you end up knowing somebody that they know. And that definitely was the case in the search. And it influenced how my mom reacted to the whole situation ultimately. So a happy ending for the most part. And I do like to say that while I would have liked to have seen my birth father and been in the same room with him and eyeballed him, I don't feel one iota of longing for that relationship because I had a fabulous adoptive dad. You know, brings tears to my eyes to even think about him. He was a great dad. And my twin sister and I, we both agree of my parents had three adopted kids and three biological kids. We were the only twins. We were the oldest. By far, we were his favorites. And I think it's because of the twin thing. He got such a kick out of both of us. And he was always up first thing in the morning and chatting with us in the morning, would drive us to school. You know, and we really did feel like we were special and we were his favorites. So
yeah. Well, you were learning how to be an identical twin the same time he was learning how to be a dad.
There you go. There you go.
So you were on the job training together.
Yes. Well, we got his sense of humor too. He had a very silly sense of humor and he knew he would get not one giggle, but two giggles.
Oh yeah.
Out of his little practical jokes.
You have an audience with twins. It's really true. Honestly, I should have started writing stand-up comedy when the kids were little to see if I could win them both over. They're both such tough crowds. So you were adopted at infancy.
Yeah, 3 weeks old.
When did the conversation of adoption even come up, if at all? Like, when did that happen in your family? It is so different for every family. There are people who always knew from the time that they could remember that they were adopted. And then, of course, there were people who found out much later. Where was the finding out about your adoption and your lifeline?
I seem to always have known, but when I went back to write this book that's coming out in February, which is about being twins, growing up as adopted kids in this big blended family, it was right around age 4. When I was 4 years old, President Kennedy was assassinated. And it was right around that time, because I have vivid memories of those kids, Caroline and John, mm-hmm. they lost their dad. Are they going to get new parents like we got new parents? And so my parents must have told us sometime that year about being adopted. I don't remember even being faced by that. Mm. You know, if you're feeling secure and loved, and I had this special bond with my sister, I don't remember being faced by it. When it started to like really hit in that this was unusual, and in that era, so growing up in the 60s, a bit of a stigma, was when I knew other people knew about it, who I didn't talk to about it, and they had questions about it. And I didn't want to talk about it. I have a chapter in my next book, Twice the Family. The title comes from my parents getting twice the family when they got twins. I'm on this sleepover, and this friend of mine says, "You guys are adopted, right?" And I was like, "How do they know about that?" Mm. I never told them. So that realization that people are talking about you, mm-hmm. they're talking about your family, how your family is put together, and that, you know, why were you adopted? Well, I couldn't answer that. I didn't know closed adoption. I didn't know why we were adopted. And I certainly didn't want to talk about it to somebody that I hadn't brought it up with. So I quickly realized right around 10 and 11, this is a bit of a stigma. Because back then, that usually meant that my birth mom was an unwed mother, or there was poverty perhaps in the family that meant that they couldn't raise by their biological kids. So there was a stigma associated with where I came from. And certainly for my parents, although relatives and everybody knew we were adopted, it wasn't something they talked about with other people, because it brought attention to their infertility issues that they had for, oh gosh, 6 years. And then all of a sudden, three adopted kids later, there was no infertility issues. They were able to have three kids. So, and those siblings are really fun and very excited about my sister and I having figured out where we came from, and they embrace it. So it's turned out to be a good conversation.
That's wonderful. Adoption still is such an interesting topic, because I don't know how much we've actually progressed societally as far as the stigma of adoption goes. And if you think about all the things in the world that are needed, yet there's still this weird, dark shame cloud. And it doesn't really make sense if you think about it big picture wise on any side. There's shame on both the adopter and the adoptee. But if there's something that you can do with the age of information, we find out a way to do everything. But yet this way, for some reason, it still seems like there's a stigma of failure around it. But there really shouldn't be. It actually is success that either the mom who's putting the baby or babies up for adoption was savvy enough to know that I can do this, and the children are going to get the benefit of having a wonderful life that they might not have had otherwise. When we were going through our own issues of fertility, similar to your adoptive mom, we were looking into adoption. And so we weirdly were looking into international adoption. It's a very long story. I will save that for another podcast. But we found out that the one country that we particularly wanted to adopt from, you needed to be a citizen of, which I thought was also interesting, because I'm like, okay, this is a, you know, not a very up and coming country, still to this day isn't, yet they were making the rules so difficult for us to adopt a child from that country. So previous to this life at Twiniversity, I worked in African travel. I'll leave it at that. So, but I was so shocked that it's like, okay, you have more babies than you know what to do with. We've been to places to see all these babies, but no, I couldn't have one because I was an American. I understand on one half, as far as being like traditional and keeping cultural, like I get it. But there was the other part that was like, I could give these kids like a life that they would never know. It was so interesting. And then we ended up getting approval for our first round of IVF. And as they say, Julie, the rest is history.
Yeah,
that was it.
An interesting thing being from the era that I'm from, because twins really were very unique, as you know, because it was before.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And we did find out in developing a relationship with our birth mom that twins ran in her family, and not just identical, but fraternal twins. So they are in that whole maternal side. I have three daughters. Two of them have, well, between them, they have five kids, all boys, no twins. So I'm still waiting for those twin grandkids.
There's still time. There's every year that your kids wait is another year that we put another notch on our twin belt, and we'll see what happens.
I like that.
When you finally met your birth mother, what was the conversation like? Was it very medically heavy? Give us all the details into everything. Or was it more kind of psychological and emotional and having kind of that closure? Because you went into this with a very medical mind. You were like, we're going to solve a mission. We need to know the genetics of our family. We need to know what the history lies with us. But when you finally got there, did that get pushed aside? Tell us the story of what exactly happened.
So Twice a Daughter is the story of what happened. And because she was scared to death that we contacted her, She'd been married for 30 some years, never told her husband. She denied contact right away. We were working through a confidential intermediary service, and that initial contact, because it was rejected, meant we couldn't contact her again. I had to go before a judge, present all my medical history, and he allowed that we could go back to her with a medical history form to fill out.
Okay.
Which she did do. She sent it back, and then she went radio silent. About 9 months later, she called the intermediary. See, I don't know her name. I wasn't allowed to know her name until she gave permission. She contacted the intermediary and asked some questions about the process. And we started writing letters to one another. Mm. So our reunion, if you would, was set up in all of these many steps. And then at the end of like exchange of like three rounds of letters and pictures, she decided she wanted to talk to us on the phone. Mm. So by the time we got to this conversation on the phone for the first time, I already knew a lot about her. And we dove in person after talking on the phone with family history. We were past the medical stuff and we dove into the medical history, but we also dove into her guilt and shame about what happened with our birth father. She was the oldest of a big family. They would have disowned her. Religion was a factor. And she hid behind secrecy she was in her 70s when we found her. So this had been a big thing that she had internalized, this secret, this shame. She hadn't told her husband. Mm-hmm. And it's still part of our relationship, which I completely give her free rein with that. We see each other every few years or so. She's 92. She doesn't live anywhere geographically convenient to me. I talk to her on the phone, but it's really uncomfortable for her when we come to visit because she's got to explain. She's in a bubble in her assisted living center of her peers that still think of unwed mothers as a sinner. Shameful, all of that. So to go visit her very often is difficult for her, and it's difficult for us because she can't help herself. I'm giving her a lot of grace here. She can't help herself with what happens when she introduces us to people. We get introduced as these are relatives visiting from Chicago, not these are my daughters. Yeah. So we're careful around each other. We've set up enough boundaries. We want to be in relationship with one another, but we get where we're coming from. Yeah. And so I'm careful with myself too, because my mom and dad treated my sister and I as, you guys are so special. You're so beautiful. I mean, talented, whatever. They were wonderful parents. So I grew up with this pretty good self-esteem. And then to go into a relationship with somebody that I've always wanted to know and be treated less than, I have put up those boundaries where I can only do so much so often if I want to be in relationship with her. Does that all make sense?
It does. That's tough, though. That's tough because the thing is having that relationship, a mother-child relationship, is really one that's known to have no boundaries. And so to create that and then to know that there's all these walls put up. But honestly, I understand where she's coming from. I really do. It was such a different world. It was so, if we think about how bad it is now with the stigma of adoption, forget it. My father had an aunt that after she passed away, I was 18 years old. I was living on my own. Really weird. I had a landline and I got this call from the Postal Service. And the Postal Service was asking me these questions about family names. I'm like, I don't think this is the Postal Service. I don't know. This is like, this is a little too personal. Long story short, it ended up being a child that my father's aunt had given birth to before she got married. And so we had this cousin that was out there that we had no idea. And she used this guise way before. I don't even know how she found out. I think actually it might have just been from the Yellow Pages. Like, it was weird. But I still had my maiden name, which isn't it's just a bizarre thing. But I think about how that aunt that I knew my whole life had this life that no one knew about. And there was this child that was probably desperate to learn that whole time about them. And we were all here waiting. Now, unfortunately, my father's aunt has passed away, but she's just as much of our cousins in that pack as everybody else. There's no black, white. It is just a mush of family insanity. We all have our baggage. Everybody's got our thing. Who's known for what? But she has blended in, and her partner as well has blended in so wonderfully. And interestingly, she opted not to have any biological children, but adopted multiple children from multiple different cultures. Yeah. Yes. So she passed that right on. And you could, all her children look like they're adopted. Like you would be like, there is a story to this. Like there's, oh, like I need to know. But I love that she did that. And to me, having that in my, you know, not, I wasn't even contemplating having children at that time, but that really shaped my own thoughts of adoption. I think that that's where kind of the key of the shame kind of stops existing, is when you know people that were adopted and you know the life that they had and you're like, okay, this makes perfect sense. Did you and your sissy ever have any conversations like that? Like when you were 11 and after that slumber party, did you say, okay, we need to break this down and we're gonna, like, did you have a common discussion about what your talking points were going to be with your friend circles? Was it anything ever official, or were you just flying by the seat of your pants and were an open book from the beginning?
Two things. So we did, after that sleepover, develop a little dialogue, which was, yeah, we're adopted. We don't know anything. And our parents are our real parents. So those were the three things that we basically would just shut the conversation down and send the message, this is not something that we want to discuss. So that's the first part. The other piece was in the secrecy of our room. She and I, and this is something I've learned subsequently, adoptees are famous for this. We developed our own little fantasy about our birth parents. Mm-hmm. So we decided that they were teenagers. She was the head cheerleader. He was the, you know, the big football star. They were intimate. This happened. They wanted to go to college, and we were inconvenient. We liked that little fantasy. That's the one that we believed. And it got us through, like, okay, they're all doing their thing and maybe our paths will cross sometime. But here we are. We've got this great family that we live in. In our 50s, we got the non-identifying information from our adoption agency's file. Guess what? None of that was true.
No high school sweethearts?
They were not.
No smooching under the bleachers?
No, they were co-workers. They were well into their 20s. She was a little bit older than him. And it wasn't the fantasy. And it took a little while to kind of go, okay, assimilate this new identity into our beings. But we were adults, so we were able to do that. One of the interesting things, I'm just going to go back to the DNA stuff, finding out that we were not fraternal twins, because we thought our whole life that we were. We did this DNA test and found out we were identical. And one Christmas, not too long ago, I gave the DNA kits to my kids and she gave some to her kids. So a couple of my kids wouldn't do it, sharing information with whoever. But two of them did do it, and my twin sister's son did it. My nephew was a little bit closer related to me than two of my children.
Hmm.
Fascinating, right? Like 0.1 or something like that. But one of my daughters, when she sent it in and it came back, it showed up she had two mothers.
Oh.
Yeah. Two mothers, and my husband hadn't submitted his or something. And she says, how is it this I have two mothers and no father? And another thing that has happened, interestingly enough, just a couple of times, I do clear, you know, the retinal scan at the airport. A couple of times, her picture has shown up for my retinal scan. Oh. So, you know, again, proof that Yeah, we're identical. I don't know about the fingerprint stuff, but we get a kick out of it. She's like, oh, yeah, so-and-so thought I was you in the grocery store. And I just pretend that I know who they are. And then I introduce and say, yes, we may have met, but I'm really Jenny. I'm Julie's twin sister. And as far as the writing the books and on doing all that, she always had full right to correct, change. If something she didn't like, I would have taken it out. When my first book came out almost 4 years ago, Twice a Daughter, it's a picture of us on the cover as teenagers. We look exactly alike. She got the copy in January. And by March, I was like, Jenny, you know, did you read this? She said, I know how it ends. I trust you. And I think that defines our relationship is, you know, I could have written all sorts of stuff she might have been uncomfortable about, but yep. She knew that I had her back. She knew I wouldn't say something that she was uncomfortable about. And I think that that's that trust that we have. And I hope, you know, most twins have that trust with each other. And that means I've got your back, you've got mine, and nobody's going to hurt one another, which is not to say we didn't fight. We did. It was mostly about clothes and cars, never about boys. Our voices are a lot alike. So we did sometimes get rid of a guy on the phone that one twin didn't want to talk to and pretend we were who we were not. I was shy. We never took tests for each other in college or anything like that. But I know that some twins have. One interesting thing, having written these books about adoption and twins, is I've gotten to know several sets of twins that were also adopted. And so I know of 5 sets of twins adopted through Catholic Charities, and all of them are women. And I've gotten to be good friends with one in particular. And it's fascinating to know that you share not only the twin piece, but the adoption piece. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really, you know, going back to what you mentioned earlier, it's an important dialogue, you know, talking about this experience about being adopted is in and of itself important, but then mm-hmm. adding the adoption piece to it is also a great conversation, because I have a brother that's adopted 2 years younger. I'm not biologically related to him. We understand each other a lot, but not fully, because he's not a biological sibling. And we did all have each other's back growing up though, too.
Of course. Well, you're still a team. You're still team family. It's such a fascinating story, and I'm so excited. I don't know if I'm entitled to a free relaunch.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that your whole book catalog so far is unbelievable. And we've worked with Dr. Joan Friedman and Dr. Nancy Siegel, who are kind of the experts of psychology in this area. And I am always fascinated by their literature. And that's actually how I met Joan, was when my 20s were little. I read her book, like Emotionally Healthy Twins. And it's so funny to have her. It's not funny. It's so surreal to have her as a peer. When mm-hmm. you read somebody's book and you were like, this is my, you know, this is my twin Bible. Like, this is going to be kind of what, you know, I was experiencing with my fraternal twinnies at the time. It was really, really could relate. And I can't even imagine how much people are going to get out of all of your books, not just the one that's coming out kind of this spring, fall, whatever it is, but our launch date is February 4th. It's called Twice the Family. It's a memoir of lost love and sisterhood. And I am super stoked. All the information will be in the show notes, so everybody could pre-order now. And, you know, honestly, it's definitely going to be one of those gifts that you're probably going to want to give to your 20 or to your children, because they might be 20s and you could have been in this situation. But Julie, just like sincerely from like all the twin moms around, thank you for giving a voice to this pocket of our little community that we know exists, but nobody's really put a voice to it. And that's kind of where you've come in. So on behalf of all of Twiniversity, I thank you and Jenny for everything that you have shared with us, because you're so generous with that and you're so honest, and it's raw, if anything. And it might be too much for some people. This may be a book you pick up, you read a little bit, and you're like, today is not the day I could finish this, but it's going to be there. And it's definitely going to be one of those books in our twin parenting library that's going to stand the test of time. So Julie, sincerely, 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 thank you so, so much for playing with us today.
Thank you for inviting me. This has been really fun.
Oh, I love it. Okay, guys, for everybody out there, we're going to put all the information about the books in the show notes. So you will have that. So no matter where you are watching, know that we will get you this information. And if you have questions for myself or for Julie or anything about this topic, do not hesitate to reach out to us at community@twiniversity.com. We will slide it right to her, or you could slip into our DMs too. So don't be ashamed. You could always find anything from our Twiniversity family. We are an open book here, whether we like it or not. It's too late now. Cat's out of the bag. We can't go back in. There's just too much to stuff back in that bag, but we will always be here for you. And if you are experiencing this, if you are 20s that have been adopted, or you were 20s that were adopted separately and finally found each other, definitely reach out to us, because there is a way that we could put you in touch with Joan or Julie or Nancy or any of the people, because you have a story that definitely needs to be told and we really love to hear it. So, yep. So for World, if you need anything, you know where to find us. And until next time, guys, see you later, alligators, and thanks for listening.